True Crime Anonymous may not be suitable for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Hey everyone, welcome back to True Crime Anonymous. Today's Mass Murder Monday. And if you're new here, every Monday, we talk about a murder that occurred in Massachusetts. Why? Because I'm from Massachusetts, and I thought it would be neat, because I listened to quite a few podcasts, and ain't nobody doing it like me. I'm so dumb. But I thought it would be a different idea. So here we are, Mass Murder Monday. I think this is number 3 or 4. I don't know. We are in the beginning stages of all of this. So I'm just trying different techniques. And like today, usually I like take notes and then write a story. And then, you know, tell my story to you guys. But today I'm just gonna try to speak freely and just kind of wing it with my notes, and we'll see how this goes. I'm pretty nervous that I'm gonna do really bad, but if I do, hang in there with me. And if it sucks, then next time it'll be back to me writing out a story and then speaking it to you guys. So I'm just trying to do different things here. Find out what works, what doesn't. Anyway, today's case, we are talking about the Wakefield Massacre that occurred in Wakefield, Massachusetts. And today's case has a lot to do with mental health issues. It is incredibly sad all the way around. This case stinks every way you friggin' look at it. 7 people's lives were taken by one man who may or may not have been severely mentally disturbed. I mean, you have to be mentally disturbed anyway to plan out, you know, a murder. But, you know, once I tell this story, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Like, did he have all of these mental issues that he claimed? Or did something, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, did something push him over the edge? And were the killings fueled by this event? And that is kind of like the argument that, you know, we're looking at here. The outcome, it has already been determined by the judge and, you know, the court of law. But, you know, and there's so much information available on this case, and I'm really going to do my best to give you guys, you know, all the information that I can. But if you're interested in this case and, you know, want to learn more about it, I really suggest that you go and look, you know, look online about it. And just, it's a really interesting case. You know, this guy was brilliant. He really was. Even though, like, he did bad in high school, but I really believe he was acting out. You know, he was, you know, being raped repeatedly, he claims, by a neighbor. His parents were strict Christians. You know, so I don't know. I think he was just acting out, you know, in high school. He was just being a teenager. But, you know, he was very smart after high school. He went in the Navy. He was honorably discharged after, like, 6 years or something. And then he, you know, went from in between a few jobs and ended up at this place. But we'll get to all of that. Anyway, see, this is why I write the story, because I just lose my train here. Whew, I'm derailed already. We're just going to keep going. This tragedy happened on December 26th, year 2000, in Wakefield, like I said, at Edgewater Technology. This was a place of business. This is where this man was working. It was just the day after Christmas. You know, everybody was just glad the holidays were over and back to work. And this man who came in and shot this place up, his name was Michael McDermott. And he... There's so many things. Let's just start at the beginning of his life. He was born September 4th, 1958. His name when he was born was Michael McDermott Martinez. He was born in Marshfield, Massachusetts. He was the second of four children. His parents were Richard and Rosemary Martinez. They were both teachers, both members of the Historical Society. When he was a teenager, he would help his parents in their community work. He was a member of the Marshfield High School Audiovisual Club, and he graduated from Marshfield High School in 1976. And according to a few people at that school, he was a pretty popular guy. In 1976, the same year that he graduated, in late June, he enlisted in the Navy. He served, served in several submarine training schools until the next year, in 1977. He was assigned to Nuclear Power Training Unit in Idaho. I don't know why I just said that like that. in Idaho Falls. And then until 1982, he served as an electrician on the USS Norwal. And he was finally sent to personnel support in the Naval Station in Charleston, South Carolina. And in 1980, he changed his name to Michael Morgan McDermott. And 2 years later, in 1982, he was honorably discharged with the rank of Electrician's Mate Petty Officer Second Class. From 82 to 88, he worked for Maine Yankee Nuclear... Why do I say it like that? Nuclear. Nuclear. Okay. Nuclear. Maine Yankee Nuclear. It's a funny word. I can't get over it. I'm not... Anyway, train is derailed again. Get back on track. Power plant, like I said, between 82 and 88. He trained to be a reactor operator, but he never actually got that position. He quit his job and moved to Weymouth, Massachusetts. And in 1990, he started working for Duracell. And he got himself a girl. And on September 26, 1992, he was married to Monica Sheehan. And these two were former high school acquaintances. It doesn't even say that they were friends. They were acquaintances. But this man was difficult and just not equipped to be married, I guess. So they separated in May 96 and were divorced the next year in 1997. And after this, he became extremely depressed, gained lots of weight, and kind of adopted this more shaggy look. If I can paint a picture of this man for you guys, he is a bigger man. And he has a long, unruly brown beard with long, crazy, dark brown hair. Yeah. And I don't know how good of a picture I just painted for you, but yeah. He's just a big man who looks unkempt. Anyway, continuing with this timeline. In February of the year 2000, he quit Duracell because they were moving to Connecticut and he didn't want to go. Even though they offered him a position, he was like, nope, I can't move to Connecticut. Gotta stay here. And that's when the next month, in March of 2000, he joined Edgewater Technology. That same year, it was like Halloween of 2000, he moved out of his apartment in South Weymouth and moved closer to work in Wakefield. Apparently he wasn't paying rent, he left a nasty mess, he owed his landlord like $1,700, he actually moved to Haverhill, not Wakefield. So he lived not too far from his job, but he just left a nasty mess. Owed him money. The landlord said that like he had to completely renovate the apartment after he left because he left a broken dishwasher. There was holes in the walls. The carpet was torn up. It looked like there was a flood in there at some point. The upstairs neighbor said that like he knew he collected antique guns, but he was quiet and he never bitched about anything, apparently. Let's see. So the year that this happens, things are looking really bad for him. The IRS claims that he owes about $5,500. And his employer is going to like garnish a big part of his paycheck until this was paid off. And it would leave him like almost $280 every 2 weeks for 6 weeks, or three paychecks. So this would have been over in 6 weeks. He would have been fully paid to the IRS, squared up, in three paychecks or 6 weeks. He didn't have to go and kill all of these people. Now, this is this part of the argument. Did he go and kill all of these people because things were falling apart and he was mad? And this is what sent him over the edge, because, you know, his work was going to garnish his wages. Or was he mentally ill, which we'll get into. So he had a conversation with a woman named Cheryl Troy and Patricia Borier. Sorry if I butchered her last name. And these were people that he worked with that would, you know, I think one was in payroll and one, she was like, human resources, I believe. So they were trying to, you know, help him and talk to the IRS on his behalf, but he claimed he didn't owe the IRS anything, and he didn't want to pay them a dime. He claimed he owed them nothing. He grew upset and angry and didn't understand why Edgewater, his company, had to even comply with this. Like, why? He was not willing to make a payment plan. And he said, I'm not paying them shit, basically. He was also behind on his car payment. They were ready to repossess. He would actually park his car down the street instead of in the parking garage that was for the employees, because he didn't want the repo people to find his car in the garage. So he parked the car down the street. Now, 4 days before, no, so 5 days before this happened, on 12/21, the bank called and said, "We are going to repossess. Like, this is going to happen." And he basically said, "Good luck finding it," you know. The day after that, on 12/22, he asked three of his coworkers to go to his cubicle to witness him sign a will. And then 2 days later, on Christmas Eve, he was like test firing some of his guns on the side of Crystal Street. It's like a secluded area, like 5 minutes from his house. But he was, you know, test firing guns. And Christmas Day, he went into his work at a few minutes before 7 p.m. and left just 18 minutes later. He was suspected that he was planting guns in certain places and doing a walkthrough of the layout again, just to be sure. So he's planning all of these things. On December 26th, everyone comes back to work after a wonderful holiday with their families. And there goes the stupid cats. Every single time I'm recording, my cats are doing something. Bye, kitty. Okay. Goodbye, kitty. I'm so sorry. Yeah, so the day after Christmas, everyone comes back after a wonderful holiday with their families. Everyone is excited to talk to different coworkers and friends about, you know, the experience they had with their families and what they got their kids for Christmas and all of the things that go on. Maybe even, you know, like exchanging some presents and bringing in all the leftover holiday food. I don't know. All of the things that people do after Christmas. Everyone was excited, but not excited probably to be back to work. So he goes into work at like 10:30 in the morning, 10:29 to be exact, with a big black large duffel bag, and he has some friendly conversation in the kitchen with a coworker. But when the coworker sees the duffel bag, he like abruptly ends the conversation. At 11:07 in the morning, he's at work. He receives a call from the bank about the car repo. And he says, "Listen, I don't even need the car anymore. It's in the parking garage." So we parked in the garage that day. "It's in the garage. Come get it. I don't need it." Calls his mama, talks to his mom for a little bit. And he just started killing people. He went and killed Cheryl Troy and Miss Haggerty first. And he shot most of his victims in the back of the head repeatedly. I'm trying to find okay, so he shot Janice Haggerty, who was a 46-year-old office manager, and Cheryl Troy, who was 50 years old, and she was a vice president of human resources. He kills them first. And Rose Manfredi, she was a 48-year-old accountant in payroll. She tells Linda Tessier to shut and lock the door, and she does. And Linda Tessier tells everyone, you know, get under the desk. And Paul Marco, he's a 36-year-old development tech. He gets under his desk, and, you know, Linda Tessier is under her desk as well. John Land, he was a VP of consulting services, was standing with Louis Javel, and Michael walked towards them, you know, with an assault rifle in one hand and some other unknown item in the other hand. And Michael was like 15, 20 feet away from them. And Mr. Javel says, "Oh shit." And quote, "Mike, why?" Unquote, followed by a gunshot. And he actually shot him 4 times. And Craig Wood was at his cubicle, and he was heard saying, quote, "Mike, no," end quote, and he shot him 2 times. Then he goes and killed Jennifer Capo Bianco, and he shot her 4 times in the back. He fired a shot through the lock on the door in the accounting area. He shot Manfredi multiple times. She screamed, and he just shot her again. And she did not die instantly. It actually took her a few minutes to die after she was shot like 4 times. Marco was shot in the head, stomach, and chest. And then he was dead. Now it's 11:15. Wakefield police are finally dispatched after several 911 calls claiming that there's shots fired. Now officers enter this building cautiously and expecting the worst. But they find Michael sitting in a chair in the reception area, upright, motionless, you know, arms on the armrests. The duffel bag was on the couch. The AK-47 was on the floor by his right foot, and a 12-gauge Winchester 1300 pump-action shotgun was by his left foot. There was no more ammunition in them. And they were like, "Get your hands up, get on the ground," and he just sat there and did not comply. And they were like, "Put your hands on your head." And he interrupts them and he says, quote, "I don't speak German," end quote. And the two officers kind of pull him to the ground, cuff him up, search him. They find another gun, like a semi-automatic 32 caliber Spanish, what is it called? Rip Plaza semi-auto. I don't know anything about guns, but that's what the name of the gun was called. And that was in his front right pocket. Inside the duffel bag, there were several fully loaded magazines, loose ammo, shotgun shells, and cartridge boxes. So they have him roll over, stand up, sit back on the chair, lift his legs, boots off, and they search his boots. They get him into the police car and, you know, away from this scene as quickly and swiftly and quietly as possible, because there was a lot of people who had just been killed, and, you know, that needed to be dealt with, and they needed to get him out of there to ensure the safety of other people, and, you know, to you know, try and save anyone if possible. So they get him out and to the station and booked. Now there are 7 people who were killed. The victims were Craig Wood, age 29, of Human Resources, Janice Haggerty, 46, the office manager, Jennifer Bragg Capobianco, 29, of marketing, Cheryl Troy, age 50, vice president of Human Resources, Rose Manfredi, age 48, accountant and payroll, Louis Havele, age 58, director of consulting, and Paul Marco, age 36, development technician. That is a lot of lives taken and a lot of families destroyed forever. That is a lot of devastation. Now, was this because he was mentally ill? Or did he get pushed over the edge by his life? You know, his repossession and his IRS tax lien and, you know, his depression and all of these things. There's so many questions, and the police just have so many questions, especially like, why are you saying you don't speak German? Like, we're speaking to you in English. Like, where are you in your head? So police just like recover numerous discharged cartridge casings, spent projectiles. There's ammunition everywhere. And you know, if you look back on his life, there's a lot of things. And so that's what I'm going to talk about next, because he testified in court all of these things. The defendant testified that his parents were strict Catholics. He was raped repeatedly by a neighbor growing up. He was a, quote, geek. But his acquaintances from high school said he was quite the popular guy. So, who knows? He was highly intelligent, but received poor grades in high school, got into trouble, robbed his neighbor. He attempted suicide as a teenager. He took a bunch of sleep easy pills. Then he joined the Navy for 6 years. And, you know, like I said, he was honorably discharged in June 1982. But in 1987, he attempted suicide by cutting his wrists. And he was admitted to Pembroke Hospital. Now, he filed workman's comp claim against a Maine Yankee because he wasn't permitted to go back to work. And he actually received $85,000 because of that. He should have saved his money. And he wouldn't have, like, cared if he owed the IRS money. That's probably why that he did owe them money, actually. He probably didn't pay taxes on that money. That's probably exactly what it was. It didn't say that, but that's what I'm assuming. In September of 1989, he took classes at Northeastern University. But in May 1990, he was admitted to Boston Hospital for suicidal thoughts. Now, in the early 1990s, it doesn't say the exact date, but that he overdosed on Xanax, attempting suicide again. And he was admitted to Pembroke Hospital again for 7 weeks. It wasn't until 97 that he was divorced. And he started working at Edgewater in Wakefield in the year 2000. But obviously, like, he had a long-standing depression problem, and these are all the things that I'm going to list off that he claims that he has. He said that He had visual distortion, claustrophobia, difficulty focusing, muffled hearing, ringing in the ears, auditory hallucinations. But he kept his issues to himself because he didn't trust psychiatrists for his fear of being locked up. And because he didn't want to be labeled as crazy. And that's that part is a legitimate thing. Like, I think a lot of people keep their mental health issues hush-hush because they're afraid of being labeled crazy, and that's the crap part about it, is that mental health has such a crap stigma attached to it. And people need to realize, like, mental health problems are, like, in a lot of people, if not in everyone, in some sort of way, whether it be just a tiny little thing that you have, all the way to, you know, a long laundry list of issues like this guy claims he has. But he also claims that Maine Yankee, the job that he worked at, exposed him to radiation. He claims that it killed his thyroid. Quote, killed. He took a variety of meds in his life for hyperactive thyroid, high blood pressure. He took antidepressants. He took Prozac, Trazodone. But he said he was lying to the doctor since the 80s to get certain meds. Right before he went on this killing spree, he downed Percocet, Darvocet, and some vodka. He washed Percs down with vodka. So it looks like he, you know, had a little bit of a pill problem too, maybe. Which, that's not documented either, but he's lying to the doctors for over 20 years to get the pills that he wanted, you know, so he knows how to manipulate. Because, you know, he researched all these things. Now, here's where things get crazy. Even more crazy, I should say. He also testified that 2 weeks before all of this happened, after he learned of his IRS issue, an archangel appeared to him at his cubicle. The archangel said God has a plan for him and said he could obtain a soul and go to purgatory and possibly in time go to heaven if he went back in time and prevented the Holocaust by killing Hitler and six of the architects of the Holocaust, who were Nazis wearing swastikas. And that is when he started preparing for his completion of God's plan. What do you think about that? Because he also claimed that he was born with no soul. So this archangel is saying, well, you could get a soul if you do this. So he claims that these seven people that he killed were six Nazis and Hitler. And that when he entered that building, it was like he was in Germany and he was executing this mission. It was not like he was in an office building or... I don't... You know, it just confuses me because he's saying he's so deeply mentally disturbed, but he goes and he plans all these things, because of, you know, this archangel that appeared at his desk. So it is just insane. And after all of this is done, he says that he is currently in purgatory and nothing around him actually exists. And because of this, all of these claims after he's arrested, he's evaluated by some doctors, and, you know, he's diagnosed with a depressive mood disorder and an obsessive compulsive personality disorder. He had a regular therapist, believe it or not, Dr. Rothstein, and before this, he said that he liked his job, but called him, you know, in early December of 2000, and it was about the IRS garnishment, and he was like, I can't survive on this, where, you know, what am I going to do? And he's like, well, maybe you should come in and see me, you know, before your next scheduled appointment. Let's make another one. And he had never saw him again. But he had said that he liked his job and everything was actually okay, except for, you know, he had a problem with eating bad food and spending money. So one doctor said that his suicide attempts were more like mere gestures. Like he didn't, and that he didn't have an actual mental disease or defect. There were no indicators of schizophrenia. He did not suffer psychosis at the time of the shooting. And that he believed that he was faking an insanity defense. The symptoms did not fit his behaviors. And he actually was researching how to fake a mental illness. And he claims that it was just to educate himself on symptoms of illness and, you know, if his illness was real or not. But, you know, that's just more fuel for the prosecution's fire. They're like, he researched how to fake a mental illness, and, you know, he's evaluated by the doctors, and the doctors are saying, this is crap. This is just absolute crap. He just lost it because of his IRS issue and, you know, his repossession and his just, I don't know, maybe he had diabetes and it was acting up and he was hangry. I don't know. Nobody knows what actually went on except him. You know, he's the only one that knows what's in that mind of his. Actually, you can analyze someone all you want, but that's just your opinion, whether it be, you know, professional or not. It's still an opinion. You just never know. You know, police also search his apartment the same day that this happened, just to see if there was like any other victims that, you know, maybe he had started with before he got to his work. But thankfully, there were no more victims. And so there's so much information available about, you know, the analysis of him and his mental illnesses or not. But that is the gist of it. And he was sentenced to 7 consecutive counts of first degree murder. 7 consecutive life sentences without the chance of parole. He is incarcerated at Old County Correctional Center in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. And he was also charged with he was found guilty with the illegal possession of a large capacity weapon, illegal possession of a large capacity feeding device, illegal possession of a semi-automatic pistol, illegal possession of a rifle, illegal possession of a shotgun. But, I mean, he already has 7 consecutive life sentences. He's not going anywhere. So those charges, I mean, doesn't matter. It really doesn't. He's not going anywhere. Massachusetts does not have the death penalty, so that was not an option. You know, that's a whole nother conversation, whether I think that Massachusetts should have a death penalty or not. I feel like if somebody could take 7 lives and, you know, I don't know. What do you guys think about this case? Do you think he had a mental illness? Do you think that he just went over the edge about his, you know, IRS tax lien? You know, it was only like $5,500. It would have been 3 paychecks that were short, 6 weeks worth of, you know, maybe a hardship. You know, he would have probably made it through. I know, like, if I'm going through a hard time, I always find a way to make it. And I don't know if that's just like a mom thing, if you just find a way, or if it's just like a human adulting thriving thing that you do. You just find a way to make it work. You know, reach out to your resources. Ask for a helping hand when you need it. And the real people who care for you will help you in your time of need. But make sure that when you don't need help, that you're a good person and you offer your help to someone in need as well. Because when the tables are turned, you don't want to be alone and have no one. And maybe that was the case with him. Some people are just bad people. And I don't know. Was he a bad person? Was he mentally ill? Extremely mentally ill? I mean, like I said, you have to be, you know, something's got to be off to take that many lives anyway. But what do you think? Did he go over the edge? Was he like super sick in the head? Or both? Is there both? Or isn't there? I don't know. What do you guys think? Let us know. Send us an email, truecrimeanonymous@yahoo.com. Oh, I forgot. Sorry. At this place, they actually, the Edgewater Technologies, where this happened, they planted, I think it's cherry tree. Hold on, let me try to find it. Of course, I'm not gonna be able to find it in time. Yeah, I think they planted a cherry tree, and every year, now that I want to talk about it, I'm not going to be able to find it. Oh yeah, so okay, a cherry tree was planted outside Edgewater's offices in memory of the victims, and every December, carnation flowers are woven into the branches in their memory. I thought that was sweet. Just a little something to let the victims, you know, be remembered, because they definitely deserve to be remembered. They didn't deserve this. I say that every time because I just covered like the most brutal cases, like, but somebody's got to do the dirty work, right? So that is Mass Murder Monday. It's still Monday. It's like after 10, but it's still Monday. And did you like the way I did this today without writing a story? Or did you like the one I did yesterday when I like told the story? I actually wrote a story. Or do you like it this way when I just ramble and get off track all the time? Let me know. Like I said, truecrimeanonymous@yahoo.com. True Crime Anonymous at Facebook, at Instagram. Send us a DM. And I will see you guys. Well, you guys will hear from me. I'm going to try to really start pushing these episodes out. And I want to get another one out by Wednesday. So, hopefully, I want to start something on Wednesdays, like Weirdo Wednesday or like Where'd You Go Wednesday, and do like a missing person or a weird Wednesday, like a weird case. So what's better, Where'd You Go Wednesday for missing people, or Weird Wednesday for weird cases, or Weirdo Wednesday for like a weirdo? I don't know. I like this, like Serial Killer Saturday, Mass Murder Monday. So maybe we'll do Where'd You Go Wednesday and do a missing person case. Either way, November 7th, 2019, you'll hear my voice all around the world. All around the world. Oh my god. Time for sleep. Good night. Happy Mass Murder Monday. Good night.